And I think that's the systemic racism. I think that's the power piece there that I think a lot of people aren't really paying attention to.
And as much lip service as we get from, I'm good friends with the mayor of Minneapolis. Minneapolis is not that big, right? So like me and Jacob Fry are like actually friends, right? The governor, I don't know him, seems like a good guy. But like as much as the lip service, they're now saying Black Lives Matter. They can say that word now. They're now at the point where they're able to say like, it's because of the systematic problems that Black people are angry. They can say those words. But when I've sat in this apartment for 3.5 months, while the media has told me that the reason that me and my family and everybody that's listening and watching here are more likely to catch and die from COVID, because not because we are somehow genetically inferior to the white people, but because this system has been set up that Black people are more likely to catch COVID. And then now I watch his brother out there die. So I think that yes, the fervor is real. And yes, we need to keep up to change the system that we aren't back on this in 3 months, in 6 months, or a year from now.
Andre, as one of the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who have been protesting over the past week, and this goes back to the original question about, do protests work? What does justice look like? What do you want to see come out of your efforts as a young Black woman in the streets raising your voice?
So Black Lives Matter has most recently put out their demands. One of them is to defund police departments and to defend Black lives. And I'm in complete alignment with that. I'm gonna speak on this from the lens of an educator, from an educator's perspective. Something that I've noticed offering my education services as a teacher, you know, creative arts educator in DC and in Virginia, Arlington, Virginia has the most, like, one of the wealthiest school systems in America in comparison to DC, which is much more lower ranking. And what I see in these school systems when comparing the two is in DC schools, our young people, most Black and brown kids, confront the police before they even hit the classroom, which is a problem. Take police officers out of the schools. That's one thing that I would want to see, pulling up these police officers out of schools. It might be an unpopular opinion, but take them out. I go into Arlington school system schools, and I don't see a police officer in sight. Most of the kids that are in these schools are white young people, right? The amount of trauma that our young people have to go through just to get to the classroom and being in the presence of an officer, being touched and patted down before they even hit the book, before they even hit an English class, is problematic. Something else that I would like to see done in regards to defunding police departments is for the money, the millions of dollars that are going into these police departments, to be invested elsewhere, to be invested in community grassroots programs. I think about programs like a Black Swan Academy led by Samantha Davis, which promotes civic leadership amongst young people. She takes her young people out to town halls and to speak to very influential people in DC so that their voices are heard and so that they are part of this movement for Black lives. Funding organizations like the National Bailout or Free Black Mamas DMV with Janae Taylor, one of my friends, Janae Taylor, who is a leader in the Black Youth Project 100, fundraising in order to pull women out of prison who are out of jail, out of prison, who cannot afford their bail, whose families cannot afford their bail. Organizations like Casa Ruby and LAYC and Smile, who are dedicated to uplifting and serving LGBTQ+ communities. Defund police departments and put that money into spaces that really need it, spaces that are affected most, right? That are in the marginalized communities, Black and brown people, LGBTQ+ people, trans folk. That's what I would like to see. And so I hope that these efforts, you know, as my brothers are saying, like, you know, what happens next? We get done, then what? You know, are we still fighting? You know, I think that a big part of this movement, as Dr. Shabazz has said, is you know, being radical. Like, we're done with peaceful protesting. I'm done with going out there, much like we did for Mike Brown and marching around the streets, hee hee ha ha hoo hoo, Mike Brown, Emmett Till, how many Black people will you kill? I'm, you know, I'm sorry to say this, I'm ready to tear down some police departments. I'm ready to go in and burn down some buildings, because if that's what it's gonna take in order for you all to charge these police officers, I'm down for it. I'll be the first one out there. As my brother said, here's my lighter. Here's my lighter. You got my lighter. I'm ready, because no one is gonna listen. We're done with the peaceful protesting. It's time for radical change. And if that radical change involves for some buildings to get burnt down that have insurance, exactly. We're down. We're down for the cause.
Dr. Shabazz, one of the things that I've often wondered about, and I've spoken about this as recently as last week, the Million Man March, for example, more than 20 years ago, made a lot of Black folks feel good. But I would argue only Black folks were listening. Who is this protest for? Who should be listening? Is this for white people? Is this protest the protest that should say, not I can't breathe, but I told you so?
I think that this is beyond protest. I think we've entered into a kind of a zone that could be called revolution. And it's not just a protest or an objection, but people want a complete constructive change. Some reforms must be advocated for. Well, I specifically state that the doctrine of qualified immunity should be abolished. And people say that the vote is the way. Well, that should come through the House, the Senate, signed by the president. That qualified immunity and the laws that give the police a dramatically increased amount of leeway to use force versus the average citizen. This lets a lot of police officers off criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Qualified immunity must be abolished. It'd be interesting to see whether Minnesota, and in specific this county, in this county, the county of Hennepin, to see whether or not they are really seriously address the training, the policies, and the practices of that police department, or whether they give lip service to it, or whether they actually make training. You know, in civil lawsuits, we often sue the county and we charge them with 1983 failure to train and failure to supervise. And most of the time those lawsuits are settled, but we really did not get that change in that department. They might pay money out, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, but did that change that was sued in that complaint, did that change actually take place?
Let me stop you right there, because I'm a taxpayer, okay? And those lawsuits that were settled, for example, the lawsuits that have been settled right here in Baltimore, I paid my taxes. I don't like what led up to those lawsuits, but I don't feel that in my pocket. When the city of Baltimore or the District of Columbia or Minneapolis or New York or Miami pays out these lawsuits, that's not hitting me where I'm hurt. The thing that hits me is the thing that led me up to it, which brings me to a feeling of anger and frustration that Andre mentioned earlier. Now, certainly we're not going to, advocate violence. You know, I will give, Andre the youthful impetuous expression, but I don't want to see you in jail. But how do you, Mike, channel the anger to change beyond protests?
Everybody that's listening to my voice should log on and fill out their census tonight. make sure they fill out the census, and then get on their phone and tell five friends and family to log on and fill out their census. The census is ultimately how we get counted and like funding it redistributed to us. And we got to fix. So, and then voting, obviously register to vote, make sure we go out and vote. Local, go vote down the ballot, all the races, make sure we're voting for county attorneys, make sure we're voting for judges, and keep the heat up. I was taking notes of what Dr. Shabazz was saying. I agree with all that. We got to fix the qualified amnesty. I will say that another problem we have here in Hennepin County is that we've got a racist police chief by the name of Bob Kroll, who is police union president. Let me make sure I get it. Union president. We have to figure out how the unions actually have power over what cops get away with. For example, right now, in the middle of all this, in the middle of a worldwide riot started right here in my backyard, the police union would like to change their union contract to say that if you're fired for discharging a weapon early, hit someone, and you're fired for it, you get to reapply for your job a couple years later. So they are still right now trying to get more power for police while we are trying to get them more accountable. So fill out the census, make sure we vote, but still let's be active in these streets because all these systematic problems add into the fact that he was able to feel like he can choke out a black man in this city on a holiday in broad daylight and kill this man. And the reason he felt so cavalier and so like I'm not held accountable to do it, is because there has been little tiny grasp of power by the police department in this city and around the country through union contracts and through not being held accountable, and that this police officer thinks that he has the ability to do it. We need to take some power back. Throughout the census, vote, but also I say we keep the heat up in cities around this country and make it a long, hot summer. And we're going to keep, as Dr. Shabazz just said, the only reason these police officers are not walking around the streets of Minneapolis today is because we burned down this precinct. And we have been peacefully protesting since then. And they're listening to us because there's thousands of people in the streets. So I think like, yes, census, yes, voting, but let's keep up the pressure and let's keep up the protests in the streets as well.
Explain that to me a little bit more. You're suggesting that because the police precinct in Minneapolis burned, that was the pushback for the police department to let people know that, oh, we are serious?
Yeah, I think there's no way, and I quickly answer that, there's no way that officer was charged the next day. If you were in Minneapolis and watched the timeline, the Mike Friedman came out on TV and said there was not enough. He came out with two other white people from like the attorney general or somebody else who said like, Trump's watching this, and came out and said, there's no more evidence. I was there at the precinct when we got the news, and it shocked us like to our core, And that was the moment where we said, you know what? The system is messed up. The system is messed up. And I'm 100% sure that if we didn't take radical action right then and there, those officers would still be walking around and Mike Freeman would still be hiding behind them. We're investigating, trying to get us tired to get distracted again so we can get back on this hamster wheel that I've been talking about.
Dr. Shabazz, you were going to say something.
I want to say, your first point is well taken. We have a massive 12 noon demonstration at the White House, and we're asking for millions to gather at the White House and at the precincts all over the country on Saturday, as well as every day they're gathering, but specifically on Saturday, the largest gathering at the White House and at all your precincts, Blackout Saturday. We support that. I do want to say, you asked a question about the Million Man March and others. Who was it directed to? You see, that was directed, it was supposed to be towards ourselves. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be an effort where black men took greater control of our communities and our affairs. And as a veteran of that march, I think we kind of missed the ball, to be honest. We're supposed to have some community policing in place, we're supposed to be at a greater level of what they call kujichagulia, or self-determination, where we don't have to just have white racist police officers directly preying on us. There's supposed to be organizational formations in between. I do want to say, Andre, before that cop was charged, the night of your demonstration, I want to say that we thought we gave you an assist. I happen to be friends, very close. I'm the former chairman of the new Black Panther Party. We sent a press release out 24 hours ahead of that arrest, saying that if you don't arrest Chauvin by tomorrow, that Black Lawyers for Justice and the new Black Panther Party, under Minnesota Statute 629.37, that we're going to come to his house and make the citizen's arrest. And we're going to make it on 6-5 if you don't get him now. We did it with George Zimmerman, and they somehow found him out the next day and got him. And we're not saying we're responsible, but we're saying we gave you an assist. Whatever you were doing there, we said straight up, we're going to come get him if you don't get him. And you better believe they went out there and got him that next day.
Here's the problem. Absolutely. And thank you for that, brother. Well, but I will say our fear on the ground was that he was in Florida. Give you a little bit backup take. So the fact that he was out of jail so long, and this is how crazy the system could have gotten real
who
fast.
Was in Florida?
That we thought he left the state. We put heat on him Tuesday and Wednesday. And before they charged him on Thursday, that somehow he got into a backseat and was gone. And then whether or not he was in a Trump state, and then whether or not they would defend him. So the reason why I'm saying we got to get off this hamster wheel, because we could have gone into a situation real quick where the next brother gets killed, the cop realizes I'm in trouble, you go to a state that's a friendly state, and then now what? Is it the state of Florida is going to turn to the U.S. Marshal is going to bring him back to get him back to Minnesota? I mean, it could have quickly gone even more out of control radical, where I think even more people are in the streets if he would have escaped out of the state and would not have been arrested. We could have charged him. He could have been out of the state. It could be gave him 3.5 days. Just put another idea on the ground about what was happening, because we didn't know if he was actually going to be cuffed and walked into prison tonight.
Dr. Shabazz, I don't want to have my point missed, because I do want to make sure that I was clear when I was talking about the Million Man March. And like you said, and like I suggested, that was for us. And this is why I mentioned that. Because I was in Columbus, Ohio. I was a TV reporter at the NBC affiliate on that day in Columbus. And one of the things that was happening all over the country was that because there were so many Black men, what we now know, what we now call, because of COVID-19, frontline workers, transportation workers, grocery store people, business owners and managers, they essentially shut down Columbus and other cities like that. But then they came back to work on Monday. There has been a pledge to not spend money on July 7th. And then what are they going to do on the 8th? Because the United States has come through a massive economic downturn, the biggest economic disaster imposed because of COVID-19. That July 7th, I'm like, a day? Are you kidding me? When people haven't been working for 3 months? So my question is, is this protest the new wave?
Only if it's a protest and not a movement. After mobilization, you must have organization. Now, I want to say that I want to talk to the new leaders out there. See, like the brothers and sisters that you have on here are the ones that can make the change. Systematic changes. It's true. If you have a big march and the leadership does not have firm instructions and follow up, and they're happy to have a crowd, then things won't go right.
We want this.
We have a demonstration at the White House at 12 noon Saturday. We're calling for millions. But what is the follow-up after that? Well, Black Lawyers for Justice is instituting police training, is introducing online and in-person police training and survival skills. And that's something that more and more people are going to hear about. I'm going to be conducting that every week. Groups that are out here that, like, I'm putting pressure on the New Black Panther Party. You have to establish, and these other groups that you see out here holding guns, well, we're being killed by officers with guns. We must have active police patrols in our community. We must have organized police patrols. So there are policy changes that we ourselves must make. We must have a policy of activism and engagement. I mean, that's a policy in and of itself, just to keep the pressure on all of these pressure points, the governors, the mayors, and all of that. That's a policy of pressure, not just a moment. A policy of constant pressure for change. That's a policy.
But I want to say, and Andre has been somewhat modest, and I know her very well. She just went on this run about what essentially is criminal justice reform, and that's great. But also, when you talk about young people such as Andre and such as Mike, when people like Andre are literally planting seeds in young people's minds, I'm talking about people under the age of 10, to not only understand what it means, the history of Black and brown people in this country. Andre, I'm giving you the plug because this is what you do, to whether it be through music, through education, through conversation, to also understand, to recognize racism when you see it, instead of saying, I wonder, is that? So, that is, I think that yes, we do need policy, but we also need to plant those seeds so that the trees that grow do not have the literal and philosophical nooses of racism on them. Talk to me a little bit about that, Andre.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why it's important, as I had mentioned, when we talk about defunding police departments and investing in spaces that empower young people to, to exercise skills in, criminal justice, or even just to open space, safe space for them to have conversations. I run an art studio space called Art Lab at the Smithsonian. I run team programs at the Smithsonian Institution, and I have a space called Art Lab, and kids come there after school. And just thinking about other after school spaces, particularly at Art Lab, we do our best to make sure, number one, I make sure that the staff that are in place reflect the young people that come into our space. Most of the kids that come into our space are Black and brown kids. And so while they may not be able to have conversations about what's happening in school, right? Go to class, learn English, stay on topic. We don't want to ruffle anybody's feathers. Our school is, funded by the government. We can't have conversations about Donald Trump, right? So they come to us. We better be able to open space for them to have these conversations, to vent, to decompress. Another thing that I think is really important is self-preservation, having a space for them to come and to seek healing. I remember having a young person come to me, Miss Andre, I had to run home in the rain yesterday. Well, okay, what happened? I couldn't use my hood. I had a black hoodie on, and I was afraid to put my hood on because I thought that a police officer would shoot me. What? Probably not a conversation that you're going to have in the school, but a conversation in our space, a safe space that they can come to and see people that look like them, that are demonstrating the methods that we want to put in place, or that we are putting in place to fight for our freedom, right? Conversations that you can have with us, that you can trust us to be able to give you feedback on, and to help you to understand and unpack what just transpired. The fact that this young person could not put his hood on to run home in the rain, and even run, he said, I had to walk. I didn't want anyone to see me running. I didn't want to have my hood on, just referencing Trayvon Martin, right? It's a problem. We need to open spaces for our young people to have these conversations. They're not happening in schools. I know, because I've taught in the school system. They're not happening in the schools. I have had conversations with with principals and with administration, being scolded. No, we're not having these conversations. This is not meant for our space. This is not meant for our school. So, okay, now I'm in the after school space. Now I'm in a space where I know that I can offer that to our young people because it's important and it's necessary. I can't be out here, you know, just ignoring what's happening. My kids are looking at me. They're looking at me. They're DMing me. Hey, Miss Andre, we see you online. We see you, you know, at these protests. We want to be out there. I want to come out there and meet you up there. You know what I'm saying? Like, they see us. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be that example. And so, again, you know, defund these police departments and put that money in places that can offer our young people these safe spaces to be able to have these conversations and to seek that healing, you know, to be informed. To be in front of people like, you know, who I have on this call right now. That's super, super important.
Yeah. I have 30 seconds for each of you. I'll start with you, Mike. What's tomorrow mean for you in Minneapolis and this struggle?
Tomorrow is a sad day in Minneapolis. It's going to be the funeral, George. And you know, I'm going to be out at Cup Foods the majority of the day. I would like us to think of that day as a day of how we should not allow the next George Floyd to be me, to be my cousin, to be my nephew. And in order to do that, we need to fix the systemic problems that are happening in this country, the longstanding racism that is happening in this country, defunding from a police state to a caring state, and make sure that Black Lives Matter. Okay. Thank y'all for having me, at Howard.
Dr. Shabazz, what do we need to get a conviction for all of these officers in this case? What is your tomorrow looking like?
Oh, you got to keep the pressure on. You got to keep constant pressure on if you even want to dream of getting a conviction. I say they're going to try to take pleas, but you got to keep constant pressure on. That's why this Saturday, 12 noon, we're calling for a massive demonstration at the White House and up to 1 million there and around the country in all of the cities. Everybody should take to the streets. We must continue the police training. Black Lawyers for Justice will. We at blackrightsmatter.com. We have to have self-defense. We have to have constant organizing, and you have to have support for this strong young generation from persons like myself. Man, I support all of y'all. Y'all should reach me. You can text me at 202-875-9623. You young revolutionary sisters and brothers, you have an unbridled supporter and a legal advocate also. I'm here to support you. If we keep strong like this, sir, we'll see some changes. Nothing else to me is gonna work right now.
Andre, are you gonna be out for the next protest? What is your tomorrow looking like?
It's been hard, it's been tiring. My tomorrow looks like creating and out contributing to the movement. I consider myself a liberation music maker. And so I have an album out called the Black Joy Experience in collaboration with the Black Youth Project 100, where we have taken liberation chants and freedom songs and freedom messages from the movement, from young activists from all over the nation, and have transformed them into hip hop and soul songs. And the purpose of it is for people to be able to have the language and even just kind of like the rally cries, the ability to unite people at these protests. And so it's creating. It's, you know, Nina Simone once said that it is our duty as artists to make music or to make art that reflects the times. And so it looks like creating. It looks like continuing to be out in these streets and to being radical in hopes for radical change.
Well, I want to thank all of you for participating in this really great discussion. Andre, no burning of buildings. We need your voice. And we don't need it from behind bars. We need it on the street. Dr. Chabaz, thank you so much for sharing with us, as well as Michael Griffin. We really appreciate you. Keep doing the work that you are doing as well. We really appreciate you. Thank you so very, very much. And we will continue this very important fight and issue as we move forward. And we want to remind you to join us Thursday night for part two of this three-part series. The focus tomorrow, the two pandemics, preventing further harm and healing the pain. This has been a special edition of The Daily Drum. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.